RadioInfluence.com.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
And away we go for the Landry Football Podcast, NFL Draft Day Edition. Hello, it's Chris Landry. It is April 23rd, and yes, it is NFL Draft Day. A year's worth, 2 years worth of work, each and every year, evaluating players, setting up your draft board, getting all the detailed information, albeit a little bit unusual pre-draft process this spring, with the pro days being off schedule, the medicals, less work done there as a result of the coronavirus, but the draft in a virtual form is going to be held starting Thursday night, tonight, and through the weekend. We're going to get into the latest goings-on around this draft, the latest thoughts about how this first round will play out, and take you inside the draft room on draft day. Going to back up a little bit and take you inside to, since we last spoke, last week, what's happened over this past week, and then take you inside the very final draft meetings, how it takes place, why we do it, and then what takes place on the first round of the draft, and what takes place at that after Thursday night, what takes place getting ready for Friday's second and third round, what takes place Friday night getting ready for Saturday's fourth through seventh round, and then what we do to prepare for Saturday evening and Saturday night scramble for undrafted free agents. How all that process is pre-planned, organized, and how things might be a little bit different this year. So let's kind of get right into it. You know, from this past week on, we mentioned to you last week, everybody was finishing up by the weekend your draft boards, your vertical boards, your position boards, and then your horizontal board. Everything is done with the exception of some fine-tuning. Now, what is that, any fine-tuning? In this unusual off-season, your medical grades might be a little bit more, have a little bit more variance to it than normal. But the way you do it in the early part of the week, I always did it Monday and Tuesday of the week. You get your medical staff. And you go over any player that has any issues and anything else that's come up on anyone else through the process. And you go over it and you give a medical grade. But the way you give a medical grade, yeah, the doctors may give it, but I essentially would sign the medical grade based upon what the doctor says and based upon how he answers some questions that I have. For example, okay, this is what the guy's problem is right now. This is how it's going to result once the procedure is done or the healing is done. Then what is he going to be? I try to utilize similar injuries. Tell me who his injuries like that we've had. Well, it's kind of like this guy. Okay. Then you certainly look in review. What's this guy's work ethic? And the biggest thing that you determine in work ethic, and it's why we spend so much time with trainers in college level to understand how hard does a guy work to rehab? That's the toughest thing to do. Guys like football. Guys don't like every aspect of practice, but they like football. No one likes rehabbing from injuries. No one. You fight through it. You can really kind of tell the work ethic of the guy. So you try, all right, look, if this guy's got good work ethic, he's got an issue, but once it's repaired through rehab, through a procedure, then rehab, what's he going to be like? Okay, fine. So you can take a guy from a 3 grade down to a 2 medical, and you kind of clean up guys like that. Now, you know short term that you're going to be limited what you can do, but you don't take a guy for immediacy. You don't forsake what he can be. But the biggest thing I always asked in these medical meetings is, Are there any residual issues that could result long range, that could affect long range from this injury? And that's the biggest thing. If there is, if there's increased arthritic conditions that are going to be accelerated, then that's where my grade is going to be high. If I have a player with a neck or a back, automatically going in the 2+ range at least. Great. And so doesn't mean I will rule him out, but it's going to cause me to move past him to a later point in the draft. Now, remember, don't move guys down because of medical. You keep them where they are based upon their football grade, and you have the medical code on the card that allows you to pass him up because of the medical. Very important distinction. So that's the medical part. I always met last on Wednesdays prior to a Thursday draft, on Friday prior to the start of the Saturday draft. I met last with the security staff to go over the same thing about the players, but from a security standpoint. Anything that has come up on the player, we know what's been in his past. What has happened in his recent past? Anything that's come up there that we need to know about? And then what is it? And how problematic is it? And we can find out that something happens. It gives enough time to follow up. I usually started on Thursday night. I want to recap. Thursday night with the security guys. And if there was anything that new that came up with a guy, I wanted to know about it immediately so that I can have an area scout or a coach research it with a call on Thursday night, early Friday morning, to find out more intel of what truly happened and what may go forward. Then same, you know, with the security guys, they're finding out the who, what, when, where's, and why's. And they will find out from criminal justice contacts, former FBI agents that are involved in this. They can find out anything. A guy runs a red light. You know, they'll find out potentially anything that happens. Well, what you do is you have that time. You have enough time to vet it out. And there's not a lot of that happens late. I mean, it's usually like a thing here or there that you need to make a phone call and you figure it out. And then that determines whether you need to put a character grade on them or not. If there's something on the player, let's say he's had an issue, but it's been resolved. Well, how has it been resolved? Is it just something that's been handled with a lawyer, but, you know, he kind of did something and, okay, he's out of criminal danger, but it's still a pattern of behavior that concerns you. That's where you combine the security intel with, okay, here's what the background information from the area scout thinks about the player and what's been his pattern of problems. And then how lenient you are with it. And you've got to make that call on, again, your final character grade that could affect. And I did it late because, again, I wanted to have as much information as possible. And if anything popped up late, I can deal with it. But it's not the first time I met with the security guys, because we've met with the guys previously before the final meetings, draft meetings, on the details of the character. And we've got all the dossier on them. All I wanted to do is meet with them one final time for anything that was new from 2 or 3 weeks ago. So it was not a very long meeting, and there maybe was a handful. The most I think I ever had was 3 or 4 that we had to follow up on. And that's within a couple of hours. We had all the intel we needed to find out about, yeah, this is what happened. It really wasn't that big a deal. And obviously, you know, if this was another issue, that's another in a line of a pattern with the guy, or it was just something that was just innocuous that, you know, got blown out, no big deal. Whatever the case, you got to know about that. Then, you know, those are the last true meetings what you do is you reconvene, and I always like to do this, the last 2 or 3 days in between this, is you will spend time trying to gather intel from people around the league. Try to find out maybe what people might be thinking, how this might play out in terms of before you, potential moves and discussions. And then you would do that. We'd meet a little bit early in the morning. Then everybody go and make some calls, come back a little bit before noon, and kind of get a feel for what everybody's sensing around the league. Discuss it. Have a little lunch in the room too while we're doing it. And then reconvene, make some calls in the afternoon, and reconvene, do the same thing before dinner. Now, what we'd also do in conjunction with that is to spend time going through different scenarios based upon that intel. All right, look, if we're going to go and get this 6'9 guy, we're going to have to go up, and we're probably going to have to go up on this range. What would be willing to do? Well, let's give a call to everybody from, 6 to 9, and let's see. All right, look, should you guys not have the guy you want? Would you be willing to move down? And now the answer is, possibly. All right, if you did, what would you think? Well, it would depend, of course, but we'd probably be looking at that. So you get an idea, and you have a little bit of what I call a preliminary feel for who you possibly can do a deal with. So when you go into draft day, you may not ever make those calls because it may not flow that way in terms of who's available. Because remember, you're not trading up for a pick. You're trading up for a player that you get with that pick. So as you look at that, you certainly are focusing on different ideas and concepts. And with that, you get a good feel for where you might want to turn on draft day. And you kind of get a feel for it, and you hear this. Say, I hear this. For example, you're sitting there, and you're thinking. You're anywhere from, say, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, that area. You're trying to get a feel for who do you think Atlanta and Denver is trying to move up for? Is it somebody that you might like? Where they might go? You try to want to get a feel for it. You're sitting there at 9, 8, whatever. Your guy's there. You're not worried about it. Take your guy. How do you know through smokescreen? Well, you don't, but my experience is this. If you know the league very well, know the people in the league, the coaches, the front office, the philosophy of the organization, you study tape, you know how they like to play, you know about the personnel. So you know because you know the team and because you know the personnel in this draft what makes sense. I always put it through the smell test. If it doesn't make sense, boy, that guy just doesn't fit. Well, that's why it won't happen, and that's why it's a bunch of smokescreen BS. But why I could really see that guy being a good fit for what they do, it makes some sense. Now, it may not be. They may not see him the same way you do. They may not see the fit of a player to them the same way you do. But 9 times out of 10, it kind of does. So you can smoke through the – I always could smoke through the BS that way more than anything else. But as I always say, if people are floating out, moving up for this guy, they're not moving up for that guy. You could pretty much put that to rest. But so that's what you do right now. That's what you do in the final, focusing on trade options and trade discussions and seeing what other people are doing. And then trying to, send out a little smoke screens of your own, sending a little message. If people, if you get a lot of stuff, like, for example, you feel like people are starting to get a read on what you're doing, if there's a lot of speculation, I didn't care what other people said so much, but if there was a general belief that we liked the guy and that that might be a guy. And it truly was a little bit too close to the fire. If it was truly, yeah, pretty much on target, when people would talk with you, I would certainly make sure that media folks would understand there's some other good options there. You know, and you do it in a subtle way. A player that, you know, you might like, but it's really not your target or your focus. Somebody asks you about, tell me about, what do you think about so-and-so? I hear his team likes, oh, man, boy, that guy is outstanding. You just glory. You kind of start, hey, man, they like him a lot, too. And, hey, and all of a sudden, or you may say something, man, I'd love to get a guy like that. That would be, that's what goes on at the final stages. I always like to make sure that the work was done so that you can just polish up. I'd rather kind of take it easy down the stretch and be fresh, because the weekend becomes really, it ratchets up as the draft takes place, and it really ratchets it up for everybody once the draft is complete with, undrafted free agents. I want to see, make sure that people understand that to have all the work done includes not only the draft boards of draftable players, but to make sure that the priority free agent grades on your board are in the proper order. You may have 18 guys at receiver or running back or in the secondary that on your priority free agents that you would want to invite to camp. You better make sure that they're in the right order, because that's the order that you're going to recruit if you got to sign guys. The first guys you try to sign are the players that are on your draftable board that are still left. After that, you need to make sure you got them in the right order. One thing that I wanted to address is understanding trade charts. That's part of what you kind of figure out what it might cost for you to move up or move back, what it might cost you to move up, what it you could expect to get in return by moving back. Trade charts. So when you look at trade charts, there's so much misunderstanding. You can see the trade charts on the internet, and they're very, very amateurish, certainly out of date, not very good. And not what I used and what I use currently. And the reason is you've got to understand that when you look at trade charts, you're looking at just numerical value for numerical slots. That's not what the draft is about. The draft is about players, not picks. Picks just allow you to take players. So when, operating drafts for decades, I was responsible for handling all our trade matters. And that's including determining the proper value for trades. So, and first of all, draft trades have been calculated for years, long before the Cowboys publicly took credit for their numerical chart. That's the genesis of the ones that you see today. I don't think they're very good or very updated personally. But essentially, if you look at the chart, it attempts to quantify, and people quote it on radio and TV, they attempt to quantify the value of each pick, with the number one pick valued at 3,000 points, the number 10 pick get 1,300 points, and just 100 points for the number 10 pick, or excuse me, the number 100 pick. So you want to trade from 10 to 8, well, the 8th pick is worth 1,400 points. The number 10 pick is worth 1,300 points. So you can look at a value of 100 points. A fourth-round pick could do the trick, right? In a generic sense, yes. It's like saying in a blue book value that you're going to trade a car. This is what the blue book value is. No. The blue book value is what's the year, make, model of the car? You can't just say a car. Could be 2010, could be 2015, could be 2019, could be 2004, could be any number of brands or styles. They're not all worth the same. That's what's missing in the trade charts. The pick itself is just an examination of picks that have been made in the past and putting an assigned appropriate numerical value for each pick. The problem is that the draft pick by themselves are not what's important. It's the player that you acquire with that pick that's useful. So, for example, saying the first pick is worth 3,000 points every year is beyond ridiculous. It is worth as much as the player you're going to acquire with that pick. From year to year, the top pick in the draft is valued differently depending upon the quality of the player. The same for the second, third, fifth, 10th, the 100th, 250th. So unless trade charts are adjusted each year and take into account how many players you have graded at each level in your draft board, they are not useful from year to year. If you have five players graded at 6-9, then the sixth player drops much lower than the value between picks players 4 and 5. Same thing for the number of players given grades correlating first round, second round, all the way through. If you got five players rated 6-9, then you've got five players with the numbers point value being pretty close. If you covet and would be happy with any of the five, those numbers are going to be pretty close. So there's not much drop-off. There's not the typical drop-off because no draft is typical. It's unique, like a thumbprint. So if you have 18 players with first-round grades, which is the league average per team each year, the value for the 19th pick is less before the draft starts. But let's say the players come off the board and you have the 19th pick. A player ranked 5th is still on the board. To move up, say, two spots in the draft to get a top 5 player on your board is worth a trade instead of hoping he falls just a little further down. So in this case, you're not trading up two spots, but rather trading for a player of much higher grade value. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to offer the 5th pick value. Of course not. But you might offer more than jumping two spots because in your eyes, you're getting a really good deal to get the guy that you want. And you're giving that trade partner more point value than he normally would get. He thinks he's getting a deal. I always like to have my trade partners feel they got a great deal. And they did for them. But for us, it's even better. So on the other hand, if you're picking 25th and all 18 of your first-round graded players are gone and you have 16 players with high second-round value, you would take less than the value on the chart to move back 8, 10, 12, 15 spots as you get the same grade-level player with a bonus pick. How badly do you want a player? How badly do you want to move out of that pick greatly helps to determine the true value of the player and the pick and the point total, which is why I always stress what? You have to set your draft board up with integrity. You have to set the draft board up grading to a standard, regardless of need. Then, if you do that, you're golden because your draft board will speak to you and tell you when to move up, when to stay hold and pick, and when to trade down. And what you can expect to get by moving down, and what you can expect to cost you by moving up. So remember, a numerical trade chart without parallel grades for players are only half complete, inaccurate, and useless in the draft room. I teach this a lot during scouting clinics I provide for teams, and I always stress that each team must have their own trade chart that corresponds to their draft board. The Cleveland Browns, for example, with their Harvard connections, have championed a chart that's much more statistically rigorous in approaching to draft picks, and it's non-arbitrary, it's static, and it's great. It doesn't tell you the value of the players that you get with the picks from year to year. That will adjust. So the old system massively overvalues the earlier picks and significantly undervalues the mid to late round picks. The chart shows a linear decline from pick 215 on down, which is different from the original chart, which is a distinct bump, an unusual bump at 215. While this newer chart, it's improved statistically, it still fails to factor in the mechanics of a football evaluation. So when you look and say, well, the percentage of guys making it in the first round is not that much higher than the guys make it in the second, third, and fourth. Therefore, the second, third, and fourth are worth more than that's all fine and good. The guys are going to make it based upon how you've graded them correctly. So the numbers do not matter until you grade the players correctly. That leads you to the proper numbers. Finding that Mother's Day gift for your wife, your mom, your grandmom, your sister, whoever the case may be, is always a challenge. You want to get something special. And I know a lot of folks can't visit their mom or grandparents or daughter as often as they'd like, which is why I recommend and love Skylight Frame. It's a touch screen photo frame that you can email photos to as they appear in seconds so mom can see your favorite moments. You can set up your Skylight for your mom. Receiving the first photo was going to be a wow moment for them. Now the whole family can send photos to their frame. You might live far away. It can be a struggle to stay connected. But after they get the Skylight Frame, you can send new photos almost every day. It's really easy to see what they're up to and make sure that you stay connected. Nowadays, staying in touch with these folks that we love is more important than ever. And now the easiest way to do it is with Skylight, a photo frame you can email photos to anytime from anywhere. A great feel, a great way to choose to those that you love to be close to, even when you're separated. Multiple people can send photos to the frame, and so it's such a great way to keep a large network of friends and families in touch. It sets up effortlessly in under 60 seconds. Just plug it in, use a touchscreen, and connect to your wireless network and enjoy it. Sending photos to Skylight is effortless. Everyone in your family can just email photos to Mom Skylight, and then they'll pop it in their home in seconds. It's a nice black frame, so it looks like a real photo frame, and it adds a beautiful touch to your home. So pretty simple. Skylight Frame has a gorgeous 10-inch touchscreen. You can swipe through photos with your finger and even tap in to thank the person you send the photo to. 100% satisfaction guaranteed. If you don't like your Skylight, they'll offer you a full refund. You can preload it with photos for a special Mother's Day gift, a great opportunity. So now a special holiday offer. You can get $10 off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/football and enter code football. That's right. To get $10 off your purchase of a Skylight Frame, just go to skylightframe.com/football and enter football. That's skylightframe.com/football. So, for example, when a team like the Browns have been innovative in acquiring many picks, done some of the worst evaluating in league, and so many of their valuable picks have gone to waste. So remember, while great mathematical minds are valuable in assisting in the draft process, it still comes down to knowing how to evaluate players, setting your draft board correctly, and positioning yourself to acquire as many players as you can throughout the draft process. It's really important to understand. The way it's looking right now, as we tape this podcast, top of the draft looks like it's going to go pretty standard, 1 and 2. I think the intrigue's going to be starting at 3 with Detroit and the Lions at 4. They'd like to move down, get more picks, and still get a real valued player, particularly a defensive valued player that's going to be very high on their board, and they could get that from their trade-down spot. Remember, you never trade down. What? You never trade down unless you can get the player that you want from your traded-down spot. So 3 players equally on your board, you move down 3 spots, you're getting one of them. Pure math, but it's pure math based upon correct evaluation. If you got one guy that you really like, you don't move down 3 spots. You don't run the risk of moving that guy so that you, quote unquote, you can get just more guys. More guys don't make you better. Bunch of average guys that you're constantly trying to replace. Get good guys, impact players. So it all comes down to evaluating correctly. I think it's going to be interesting to see if Miami, if the Chargers want to move up or not. That's going to be something that we're going to watch in round one. And then as you watch that, and certainly as you're listening to this podcast, you may be listening to this prior to the first round. You may be listening to this after the first round. We're going to have a feel. Where are do those teams have a quarterback ranked high enough that they want to move up, or do they feel less committed to any one player and feel like they're in good position where they are just to draft? I do think there's another storyline that's interesting in that you look at the quarterbacks and you're looking at some elite players like Jeff Okuda and Isaiah Simmons, Derek Brown. You've got a little bit of cluster of receivers and offensive tackles that we're going to start to see a run. And where does the run start for each of those positions is going to affect who's going to be available later in the first round. Going to be a lot of fun to watch that and see how it plays out. As the round is completed, we've got a couple of teams, the Raiders and the Niners, and later in the Vikings do as well, teams with multiple first-round picks. The interest in moving up, possibility of moving down if your board's picked a little clean at the top. That's going to be interesting. I wanted to talk a little bit about what happens as you complete round one. I've been through this under different formats, but the modern day format is round one and then you stop and you come back the next day for round two. Well, what happens after the first round is complete on Thursday night, you reset the board. Basically, there's not a whole lot of resetting. You take the guys off and you're good. But what you do is you look and say, all right, look now, here's the range of what we want to do in the second round. Here's what we want to maneuver. You got a guy that you'd really like to go up and get. A Samari roll that we had a first-round grade on that we really like in the top of the second. Now, in that case, we moved back and still got him. But you might want to move up high to get a first-round graded player, maybe a player top 15 on your board, somewhere in the top five or six picks in the first round. Well, this is what you try to work out and try to come up with a scenario to try to see if you can't move and see who might want to go. You call those teams. You spend some time on the phone on Thursday night and on Friday morning. You got time to do that. You got more time to try to work out a deal to perhaps move up into that spot. And you see a lot of trades. You see more trades there than you see during the course of the draft going on because you got a lot more time to deal with it. Here's the other thing to look out for. The potential of trading a veteran player is going to be more likely to do that once the day's complete, meaning after first round on Thursday night, and we'll get into Friday in a second what happens after round two or three, but you're more inclined to make that move. Maybe even Thursday night, because if you are interested in a Yannick Ngakoue, now how interested are you? Well, maybe you have an interest, but maybe you got your eye on somebody in the first round. You can't get them. Now you turn your attention to Ngakoue. Maybe you can convince for a third round pick, a second round pick, that you might want to make the move for a guy like that, but you don't want to make the move until you get a contract restructure done with the guy. You can work out a deal and say, look, if we can work out a deal, you give us permission to talk to his agent. We can work out a deal to agree to a restructured new deal. Then we'd like to trade. What would you be willing to trade? You could potentially work out a trade contingent upon getting a new contract done with him. And then you go to work on it. Well, you can do that. You can do that in an hour or so. But you don't have that amount of time when the draft is going on. You can work some of that with a contract guy working while you're drafting. You can do it. It's just more complex. You have a better chance to do it on Thursday night when the first round is over. So you can renegotiate and do that. Now we get into it's Friday, and we're headed into round two. Round two is just as exciting, if not more so, than the first round. Look, you got 21 first-round grades. Or thereabouts. Actually, a little bit less team to team. I've got 21 first-round grades on the horizontal board at LandryFootball.com because I'm doing it for a number of teams. So not every player is a fit for every team, but it's a fit for some. So I'll have a couple of more in that regard. But there's 53 second-round graded players. So keep that in mind. How many guys that you've got graded in the early second-round value? 31. So how many of those 31 go into the first round? How many of the 6-4s are still available in the second round? that gives you like another first round type look. Guys that are potential starters that are really good, how many of them are off the board? How many of them are you can go up and get? That's why you're going to see a lot of activity in terms of trade, and you do it every year. Okay. After that, you basically wait, staying where you are versus moving up and getting as many of those 6'4 guys that you can get. If you've picked clean a little bit with those guys and you've got 31 6'4 grades, you know, that may affect what you do late in the second round in terms of maybe wanting to move up during the course of the round. Again, your draft board will dictate it just like in the first round. Then you get into it, the if your board is kind of balanced, you've got how many players left in your 6'4, but how many players are graded in the 6'0 area? Well, you got 22 guys, so that's your 53 in the you now have a position or in a position to maybe move back in the third round and pick up an extra pick. You still can get a player within that same grade plateau in the third round as you could in the second round and get an extra pick, say in the fifth round. That will get you a good player. Remember, taking a player in the fifth round doesn't mean you've graded a player in the fifth round. It means it's a pick in the fifth round, and it's often a player that you've graded as high as the third round. Do the numbers. 53 second-round picks. All right, 31 third-round grades. 68 fourth-round grades. Do the math. You're drafting fourth-round graded players well in the sixth and seventh round. So that's what you're kind of working on Friday, the second, third round. Really important. Really great value. Really good players, and you can get more of them. And those are what we're looking at in terms of value. And then after Friday night, you reset your board a little bit more. There's going to be some players, believe it or not, after you get done with the third round, that are second-round graded players that are still up there. So let me just tell you again, repeat what I just said. Second-round graded players, a few of them that are on your board that you graded as a second-rounder that are going to be available when you start, before you start, or when the fourth round starts on Saturday. What do you think is going to happen? You're going to try to see if you can't move up and do a deal, because you're going to basically get another second-round pick by moving up into the fourth round. That's why you move up. People on the outside are looking at, it's just a fourth-round pick. It's this, it's that. You don't have a fourth-round, you know. Got John Runyon in the fourth round. I drafted Derek Mason in the fourth round. All-pro guys, not starters. All-pro starters. Highly graded players in the league starters. And many others. Lane Bishop was the eighth-round pick. We don't even have eight rounds anymore. A lot of good players. Just got to know how to evaluate players and then maximize that value. So you're going to reset your board and make sure that you try to position yourself on Saturday after Friday night. You try to do that Friday night by positioning yourself in early Saturday. The draft starts earlier on Saturday, not nighttime, but late morning. So you've got not as much time, but some time to try to move up top of the fourth if your board tells you to. And then you got your Saturday, fourth through seventh round. And I always do this. We really focus a lot. Get in early on Saturday morning, and I'll have the pep talk with the scouts on getting on and coaches. Get on the phone with players that we don't think are going to get drafted, but we'd like to add as free agents. Call them. You don't call them and say, yeah, we don't think you're going to get drafted and we'd love to have you. No, what you do is you say, hey, look, man, you have your position coach call, an area scout call. They're familiar with the guy. They probably met him and, man, sorry you hadn't been drafted yet. I know it's a long weekend. Your time is coming. We love you. I'm trying to get you drafted. We got a lot of needs. We don't have as many picks. Yada, yada. You know, we got a lot of things. but we got you on our mind. We're thinking about you. And you do a lot of that phone calling, and you do that with a number of guys. With the idea that, man, I think things are going to work out for you. You watch and see. But you know that chances are the kid may not get drafted. He may or may not. But you're trying to plant the seed. And then what you do in the seventh round, midway through the seventh round, is the point where I had my guys do the full press. Let's go ahead and try to sign these guys. Basically, you go and you say, Joe, no, you haven't been drafted. I'm still holding out hope that, we're out of picks at this point, or we got one more pick, and I'm hoping to get you there, but I'd like to have you here, and here's why. And, if you don't get drafted, this is what we want to do. And talk with the agent and say, look, this is what we can offer. This is what we got to offer with you. And obviously, if you get drafted, it's great. Congratulations. If not, this is what our deal is. Boom. So that way, when the draft is over, you're calling in and you're lining up. You've called and done your preliminary work, and you try to line them up. And you know going in, and you spend time on this Saturday morning. Guys, this is how many defensive linemen we need to sign, how many linebackers, how many running backs, yada, yada, each and every position. Now, that's going to be altered a little bit depending upon how many guys you've drafted at each position. So you make that alteration, and you go out and you try to sign the four best defensive linemen, the four best linebackers, whatever it is, your number. You got to make sure you try to get the best guy. But you got to move on quickly, because if you don't get your number one guy, you really better be simultaneously working the second, third, fourth guy. And if you lose one of those guys, you got to get your fifth guy if you're signing four. But you can't be sitting there dragging your feet, thinking that the guy that's the fourth guy, the fifth guy, you better go to six and seven or you're going to get shut out, and you don't want that. That's the real key to what I call finding a draft choice. And remember, you will have anywhere from a dozen to 15 players on your draftable board that you would consider drafting if you had enough picks and the draft was still going on. Why not go out aggressively and sign those guys and offer a little money to them, because that's like adding an extra draft pick. You need to do that. You should do that. And if you do that, it can get a little bit competitive, which, by the way, is also why I love collecting seventh-round picks. Give me four seventh-round picks and four sixth-round picks, and I'm going to do some business. Because you know what I'm doing then? I'm drafting in the late rounds the guys that I'd be competing to try to sign after the draft. Guess what? I don't have to add another $5,000 to the pot to sign old Joe. I'm going to use one of my four seventh-round picks to take it. So I tried to acquire a lot of picks, so I was often very busy in the seventh round, so I didn't have to overwork the free agent process, but I still needed to buttress my draft with the free agent process as much as I could, and I wanted to make sure that I was in the best line, in the best situation possible by getting on the phone within the seventh round. So it gets very competitive, and that's what you want to do to try to best enhance your capabilities. Let's talk about some guys that I think are really intriguing that maybe you don't know as much about, that are guys that are going to get drafted. They're not going to be the highest rated guys. A Kyle Duggar, a safety from Lenoir Rhyne, that's got great athleticism. A Jeremy Chinn, who's a great athlete, built like a linebacker, runs like a safety. Southern Illinois, very intriguing guy. I think there's, Troy Dye, a linebacker of Oregon. Susan Nang of TCU. Wyoming, Logan's Wilson, an outside backer, edge rusher, three-down player. Great value. Come in, start, play early, play well. Deep at receiver. Love Geno Stone as an instinctive split safety. Not a guy that I like a whole lot in coverage. I think Terrell Burgess of Utah is a safety that can make a team and help a team. A Darryl Taylor, a defensive end from Tennessee, really good player. If you're a gap scheme offensive line, recommend Damian Lewis of LSU. Matt Hennessy, a center from Temple, a make it guy, can help your team. A Matt Pert, a tackle, at Connecticut that can be a very effective player. A James Lynch, a defensive end from Baylor. A Jonathan Grenard, a defensive end from Florida. And his teammate, Jabari Zuniga. Both edge guys. Really good players. A Logan Sternberg of Kentucky. An offensive guard that's a really good player. Then I think you're going to see guys like an Ezra Cleveland of Boise State that's going to go a little bit higher than I would take him. It's just kind of the way it is. I don't think he's a left tackle. Somebody might, and you're hearing his name kind of quote-unquote shooting up. But remember this, and this is why we encourage you to check out LandryFootball.com, because we've got a true draft board that can explain to you where the player values are, where the drop-off is, and why you're going to make the moves accordingly, because that's what you do. That's how you run a draft. This whole top 50 best available player, that's useless. What are the grades? You might have top player available. What, you may have 10 of those guys with the same grade. So you can take any of those 10, but there's a drop-off after those 10 or after those 5, whatever the case may be. Understanding the grades, understanding how to grade is the key, not just some list that is meaningless. A lot of good players, a lot of depth, a lot of starters that are deep into this draft. And we're going to keep you up to date over at LandryFootball.com with the best remaining players and their values. You can come on board, get the horizontal draft board, look at where the value players are, see who's still on the board, and then obviously look at where your team goes. And as these players are off the board, you scratch them off the list. There you see where some really good value is. And that's the fun part, because that's the key. The draft is about getting your team better. It's not an event. It's a process. Understanding that, I think, is pivotal. And we help you do that. Hey, we appreciate you joining us. Check us out all weekend over at LandryFootball.com for all of our draft coverage, all of our breakdowns, and we'll be back next week to wrap it all up and to kind of tell you what's going on at that point and really start to give you a true feel for who did the best, not grade the drafts, but to give you a feel for why and some of the things that stood out in the draft process. And I think more importantly, we'll give you the behind-the-scenes story of why things happened the way they did and why teams did what they did do or did not do. So keep it here on the Landry Football Podcast, and look forward to speaking with you next week. Hey, appreciate you joining us today. And again, enjoy the draft. Check us out at LandryFootball.com, and we'll recap it all for you next week. So long, everybody. I'm Chris Landry.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
Radio Influence strives to bring you excellence in podcasting. We work with personalities like TV chef Brian Duffy, radio personalities like Ian Beckles, news and political pundits like independent journalists Frank and Tracy Beans, experts from the sports world like veteran football scout and coach Chris Landry, pro wrestling personality David Penzer, MMA experts Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan, and strength and conditioning coach Jeff Crochelle. If you're looking for food, sports, music, entertainment, politics, no matter the topic, Radio Influence has something for everyone. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.